Welcome to the Memory Library Subspace Network. Input inquiry now. Phasers and disruptors.
Phased energy refraction weapons, or phasers, are a remarkably versatile and effective device for the Federation, even though they often give the impression that other cultures' weapons could easily steal their lunch money. Unlike disruptors, for instance, phasers are not just offensive or defensive weapons, but can be a valuable tool with multiple peaceful applications. The major difference between phasers and disruptors is somewhat semantic, in that a disruptor is sort of a catch-all phrase for weapons that achieve a certain set of effects, essentially kill and kill harder. They all disrupt the way both animate and inanimate objects function on a molecular level. Romulan weapons utilize microscopic proton-antiproton reactions to generate high-energy plasma focused through a narrow emitter. The people of MNR-7 employed sonic disruptor weapons which projected high-intensity sound vibrations. In the Delta Quadrant, most disruptors emit lensed thoron radiation, which is an isotope of radon. Both Klingon and Cardassian weapons are hybrid devices referred to as phase disruptors, the Cardassian type able to function similarly to Federation phasers.
Typically, warp-capable civilizations used super-energized electroplasma in their power transfer systems, EPS for short. The electroplasma was used as both warp plasma for warp engines and also converted into standard electrical energy when fed off an EPS tap. Federation systems were designed around hydrogen-3 matter-antimatter reaction assemblies, usually warp cores, fusion reactors or impulse reactors. Besides the large warp plasma conduits, smaller counterparts with EPS couplings transfer power as electricity to all subsystems connected to the power transfer grid.
Since disruptors are so broad in form, but specific in effect, Federation phasers also have a disruption setting, used almost exclusively in armed combat. Phasers work by projecting a rapid stream or pulse of nadion particles. Nadions are synthetic particles produced when you inject stored plasma through a phase-aligned copper-lithium crystal. That's the phase part. The firing mechanism cycles packets of plasma through this crystal rapidly, instead of just a steady stream, assuring that the oscillation of the nadion density, i.e. Langmuir waves, are minimal and energy output is more or less steady. By adjusting the amount of plasma fed through the emitter and the alignment of the crystal, you can alter the intensity, the direction, and the frequency of the particle beam, which is really just extremely rapid pulses, hence frequency. Nadions are optimal because they are capable of liberating atomic nuclei. What that means essentially is that any atom that comes into contact with a nadion particle will become extremely excited with energy, and the proton and neutron bonds in its nucleus will become overwhelmed and free from the atom. This causes a chain reaction in the target that breaks down molecular bonds and begins the decay of particles into neutrinos. At low levels of energy, this causes a significant shock, overloading electronics, fracturing materials, and against living beings, causing unconsciousness due to non-permanent overload of the nervous system, stun, or death due to neurological and physiological damage at the mid-levels, kill. At sufficiently high levels of energy, this chain reaction becomes powerful enough to create a total breakdown of low-density matter, completely breaking matter into subatomic particles and neutrinos. This is the vaporize or disintegrate setting. At maximum energy levels, the output is powerful enough to cause explosive effects, as the matter is supercharged as it is disrupted, creating an explosion of superheated matter. But that doesn't mean phaser technology is strictly offensive. Essentially, from the beginning, it was possible to configure Type 6, 7, and 8 Starship phaser arrays to emit energy beams, for instance, for power transfer to ships and stations in peril. They could generate antimatter spreads, laser pulse beams, photon pulses, pulse compression waves, modulating phaser pulses, and covariant phaser pulses. Handheld phasers could be used to cut through or weld metal. The Starfleet Corps of Engineers used them to bore through rock on a massive scale, and in emergency situations, stranded away parties could use them to supercharge rock to generate heat. Think of them as a Swiss Army particle accelerator. The standard of weaponry for Starfleet has always been a form of directed energy. It started with crude plasma weapons, which were uncomplicated, blunt things that had very few other applications. Instead of transforming or phasing ionized plasma, they just shot direct pulses of it. The only real difference between that and a projectile weapon is that these shoot plasma. Hell, the pulses are even referred to as plasma bullets. Concurrently to that, Starfleet developed a handheld laser technology, which would be used along with other energy weapons that would come and go for the next 100 years. Lasers had the advantage of variable intensity settings, pinpoint accuracy, and relative simplicity. The mechanism of free electron lasers is basic enough to be scalable from handheld to ship-mounted. The electron injector shoots a pulse of free electrons into the particle accelerator. The tiny internal particle accelerator moves the electrons to near the speed of light. The electrons move through the undulator, which is a series of magnets with alternating north-south directions. Inside the undulator, the electrons oscillate back and forth, and with each bend, they emit light of a specific variable wavelength. The spacing of the magnets within the undulator controls the wavelength of the emitted light. This is highly effective when looking to kill, cut, or destroy something. The stun setting, however, requires an additional feature. In this instance, the pistol becomes an electro-laser. The laser lens adjusts to emit low-energy plasma as a medium for an ingenious, if primitive, system. First, the pistol ionizes its target path, and then sends a powerful electrical current down the conducting track of ionized plasma, quite similar to an actual bolt of lightning. This overloads the target individual's nervous system, you know, stunning them. It functions as a high-energy, long-distance version of the 20th century taser. The crude plasma weapons that were used alongside laser pistols were eventually replaced by the EM pistol, also called the EM-33 pistol. It was the standard-issue EM weaponry used by Earth's Starfleet personnel and the Earth Cargo Service personnel during the mid-22nd century. Electromagnetic weapons like these were designed to release high-power flashes of varied EM radiation, such as radio waves or even microwaves. Depending on the energy of the electromagnetic pulse, effects can range from disabling of electronic systems to physiological damage to those exposed to it. It was a marked improvement over earlier plasma weapons, especially considering they had the ability to disrupt plasma discharges. The pulse released by an electromagnetic weapon lasts for an extremely short period of time, around 100 picoseconds. This blast of energy has a remarkable effect on anything capable of conducting electricity. From nerves to neurons, the EM pulse overwhelms the target. The simultaneous activity of many nerves overwhelms the capacity of the brain to process the incoming information and can induce unconsciousness. The main drawback to this was the short-range nature of EM pulses and the tendency to accidentally fry peripheral electronic systems. They also had a lingering problem with what officers referred to as particle drift. These weapons were replaced by phase pistols in the 22nd century, but don't get excited! These are not phasers. They use more rudimentary processes and aren't exactly related. Phase pistols, rifles, and cannons were particle beam weapons, which means they use a high energy beam of subatomic particles to damage the target's atomic or molecular structure. The directed energy weapon channels energy in a particular and focused direction, using particles with minuscule mass, and utilizing a phase modulator to control the blast yield. Starfleet and Mako's used phase pistols based on separate particle energy ammunition from each other. Granted, they were more accurate and had greater range than previous plasma and EM weapons. Still, none of their advantages outweighed the ever-improving laser technology, which would eventually re-emerge as the standard fare for Starfleet. The MK-1 laser was the first in the official final series in the Starfleet arsenal. It included the MK-2, with slightly improved manual control over the beam emitter array, and the MK laser cannon. This one was unique in that it was more like a deflector array or a projector than a standard laser. It had no power supply of its own, but instead drew power from the ship's engine directly, and then focused it into a steady concussive beam. Phaser weaponry finally emerged during the midpoint of the 23rd century. The technology was used by Starfleet as early as 2233 in the form of ship-mounted phaser banks. but phaser rifles were used as early as 2265, although at that time Starfleet still utilized laser pistols, as phasers hadn't been miniaturized into handheld form. The subsequent few years saw a rapid boom in that arena, however, as the phaser became the sole weapon used by Starfleet personnel. The first known version of the now standard Starfleet hand weapon, the Type 1 Phaser, was a small, easily concealed firearm carried by landing parties. Capable of a variety of settings and beam widths, but with still full power, it was the heart of early phaser technology. On its own, it was operated by a thumb to turn the wheel-like dial on the top, which raised a dorsal plate. This revealed a small lens or screen, which facilitated aiming the tiny weapon. To fire, a small button on the bottom of the weapon served as a trigger for the index finger. Ingeniously, the Type 2 phaser pistol wasn't much of a weapon on its own, but rather an enhancement of the Type 1. The actual firing mechanism is the Type 1, docking into the gap at the top of the housing. The handle functions as a battery pack, and the emitter provides an extra level of power and focus. This form factor would last for the next 10 years or so when the Type 1 was phased out, pun intended, in favor of the standard Type 2. The Type 1 made a surprising comeback in the mid-24th century due to its size and versatility, once again faded into the background before the end of the century. The Type 2 saw multiple versions and upgrades during the 24th century, morphing into more of a horizontal articulation position than the vertical handle position of the 23rd century models. The Type 3 phaser rifle of this era, however, actually added an extra vertical handle due to its length and power. These would be replaced by the more powerful compression phaser rifles, followed by a new era in phaser tech that revisited the way we viewed plasma weapons. Instead of emphasizing streams of energy, Starfleet moved to forego rapid, steady cycles for plasma acceleration to create hypercharged, single pulses of concussive force. This was likely a response to the Borg and Dominion threats and a rare era of armed combat for the Federation. These weapons would come in the form of ship-mounted phaser pulse cannons, Type 4 phaser cannons, the handheld version of which was the Tetrion Pulse Launcher, and the new Type 3 phaser assault rifles, the most advanced of which was technically referred to as the Isomagnetic Disintegrator. Tetrion launchers emitted a direct energy pulse that exists both in real space and low levels of subspace, the subspace version being composed of Tetrion plasma, disrupting any subspace interactions of the target. This is mighty effective for anything that uses subspace for, let's say, propulsion, shielding, levitation, surveillance, or communication. The TR-116 projectile rifle was a blast from the past, developed by Starfleet Security for use in dampening fields or radiogenic environments where conventional energy weapons would be useless. It was designed to fire a chemically propelled tritanium bullet, making it functionally similar to gunpowder weapons. At one point, they were capable of being fitted with a microtransporter, which would teleport the round a mere centimeters from the target from another room. Targeting would be guided by an augmented reality exographic sensor, which showed the user its target no matter the location or direction. Working prototypes of the weapon were developed, but Starfleet opted not to produce the weapon after the advent of the regenerative phaser. For the best, really, as this seems like a big step going backwards for the Federation. Which brings us to the real point here. The main difference philosophically between weapons like disruptors and phasers is that one uses a disruptor as a weapon, while the other uses a phaser as a tool. The Federation never embraced disruptor technology, though it was both common and easy to produce. After the horrors of the Third World War and later the Earth-Romulan War, where both sides commonly used the same type of plasma cannons, the Federation has gone out of its way to evaluate the ethical implications of its arsenal. Take the Veron T disruptor, for instance. It used direct energy as a medium to deliver concentrated microwave radiation, causing the target to be torn apart molecule by molecule while being boiled alive from the inside out. The Federation spent over 100 years developing and designing weapons that offered more than such lethal force as its only option. These cruel weapons have no place in a society where the well-being of every living thing is cherished and respected.
Star Trek and all related marks, logos, and characters are solely owned by CBS Studios, Inc. This fan production is not endorsed by, sponsored by, nor affiliated with CBS, Paramount Pictures, or any other Star Trek franchise, and is a non-commercial fan-made film intended for recreational use. No commercial exhibition or distribution is permitted. No alleged independent rights will be asserted against CBS or Paramount Pictures. Live long and prosper.